Hi, this is Angela Middleton, and welcome to my podcast called I Want to BA. The reason for this podcast is that there is a huge lack of careers advice in the UK, and I'm always asked by young people, by parents and by teachers, my views on improving careers advice, and particularly by parents, what should they say to their youngster who's leaving school. I think it is a wider subject. It's not just about what job do you want to do, but it is actually about how you want your life to be. And within that, what type of career you want to select. And that career can just be the first stepping stone. Nowadays, individuals have a whole portfolio of careers. The people that I've interviewed, even at the age of 30, have had four or five careers. Myself, I've had at least five different types of careers. So this podcast is about firstly talking about careers in general and careers advice, but secondly, bringing in individuals who have experienced careers in particular industries, hence the subject I Want to BA, and they can come and talk about the path that they took to actually get to where they are, and also talk about what it's like to actually do that job and have that career. So we'll be covering every type of career that we can think of in the UK, and it will be everything from architects to zoologists. So I'll look forward to comments, and we'll build things up as we go along, and hopefully it should be of great use to parents, to teachers and to young people. So today I have Lindsay McCurdy with me in the studio. I've known Lindsay for some time because she is extremely active in the field of apprenticeships. And when I and my business became involved in apprenticeships in 2011, Lindsay was one of the very first people that I met. And the reason for that was that Lindsay was extremely vocal on LinkedIn about apprenticeships, quality apprenticeships, and the usefulness of them within the UK. And since then, I've built a great relationship with Lindsay. And effectively, what she does on a day-to-day basis is to lobby every government organisation, any stakeholder who is involved in apprenticeships or who has an interest in apprenticeships, in order that she can achieve her goal of improving and maximising quality. But when we talk in this interview, please bear in mind that what she is doing is a role of a lobbyist. And although we do talk a lot about apprenticeships, you can actually be a lobbyist in any field. And it is all about being an influencer, a campaigner, and really championing a cause that you feel strongly about. Lindsay, thanks so much for joining us. And if we could start by just finding out about your journey really from school until now.
Right. I, as a child, went to over 30 different schools. I spent my life travelling from one country to other. When we were in this in different countries, from the Far East to the Mediterranean, to people like Tobruk, which has gone now, Ceylon, which is now Sri Lanka, to the Mediterranean, 30 different schools. So from a very early age, I've always learned how to walk into a room and go and talk to people.
And how old were you when you came into the UK?
15, just before my 16th birthday.
And did you go into a school there?
I did go into school and I lasted a week. It was a different syllabus. So at that time, you could leave school at 15. So I left school at 15 with no qualifications and started work in a warehouse doing delivery notes as the office junior.
And how did you get that job?
In those days, you could see an advert in a paper, phone up, and you get an interview and get a job. Jobs seemed to be plentiful in those days.
And you were saying that you didn't have any qualifications, but you were also dyslexic, weren't you?
Yes, and when I was young, it wasn't actually assessed. So school to me was, when I had the opportunity to leave at 15, I ran.
And after you did your first job, what happened then?
Well, I met my husband when I was 17 on Brighton Pier. Okay. I was married by the time I was 18, and we moved to London as what people do. And we worked we ran a burger place. We ran a news agent because there was always accommodation come with it. We actually worked in the club to be at the time called the Marquee in Soho and had a great time. And that all stopped when I was 21 and had my first child.
Okay. And then tell us what happened after that.
Then I had five children in 5 years. Okay. And with five children, you do not work. So I become the lady that lunched.
And then what happened next?
This continued till I was in my 40s. And by that time, my husband had his first heart attack. and he had to stop work after 3 years. He basically could not get up ever. So I was left with five children at school, college, a mortgage to pay. And I thought, I've got to do something. We'd had a very good standard of living. And I thought, what can I do? So at that time, my daughter went to college to sign up. This was on a Friday. And I went along with her, as parents do. And I ended up starting on the Monday doing an HND course.
So you'd gone for over 20 years of not working and then decided that you now needed to sort of start working, because obviously the catalyst was your husband having the heart attack. You had five children. And I just wanted to pause for a moment and just consider this, because so many people at a really, really young age believe that, you know, because they didn't take certain qualifications or because of certain situations, they've missed the boat and it's too late for them. And yet here were you at the age of 40 something with these children, with a husband who was unwell and no qualifications, and yet you embarked on this new journey. It's never too late, is it?
It's never too late. And I think in today's world, more so, people are probably going to have four or five different careers in their lifetimes. You've always got to be ready for change. Change makes you what you are. That is what you have to do. And for the jobs that I thought I would want to do, I had to have the qualifications.
And you were presumably more ready for change than many because of all of that history of going to all of those 30 plus schools as a youngster and every time having to walk into a new classroom and make new friends. And whereas some people may view that as, you know, adversity and difficulty, it made you confident enough to then start that new journey.
You've got to embrace change.
So what happened when you went to university?
It was quite unusual because the people in the classroom were some of the people that my daughter had been at school with.
Right. So,
and they made me class president. And I was president all the time I did my HND, which was a really nice accolade that, yeah, you know, that young people who were sort of from the ages of 18 upwards would place me as the class rep.
Mm. And how did you fund those studies?
I worked nights in a plastics factory.
Okay.
So I used to start a shift at 10 o'clock at night and finish at 6 o'clock in the morning and run in plastic moulding machines.
So not only did you have five children, not only were you at university with an unwell husband, but you're also working nights as well.
You have to pay the mortgage.
Okay. So where did you get the energy from?
If something has to be done, you can find it from inside yourself. It's no good expecting other people to do things for you. You have to do it for yourself.
So resourcefulness is key. And that's not something you can learn. You just basically have to decide to be resourceful, don't you?
Yeah. You can either sit back and be in misery, or you can say, actually, I can make this work.
So you completed your HND, and then what happened?
I went into the final year of a degree, a four-year degree.
So you swapped courses or moved on to another one?
I completed the first course, got my HND, got distinctions, and moved into the final year of a business and HR degree.
And then what happened?
I then applied for work.
Okay.
Which was an eye-opener for me because I put my CV in and I was either too old or no experience. So they did offer me a job for a one-week temp with a local council, and I took it because that was going to be my work experience.
Yeah.
And I ended up staying for 8 years and ended up running the department.
And so how did you go from being, you know, someone on work experience for a week through to running the department?
It's making sure that you shine, show that you're resourceful, that even though you're only there for a week, you're going to give your best shot at what you're doing. If you see something that you think can be changed, suggest, talk. Mm. And I was really lucky that they saw something in me and thought we can actually do something. So I literally gone in there as a temp, as an admin person.
Mm.
And then they offered me a position, and then I got offered another position, and it just grew.
And what was it about you that prompted them to keep on offering you higher and higher positions, do you think?
I think it's something, I've always been very resourceful and thought outside the box. I can give you an example. When I worked for the council, there was D-Day, the celebrations of D-Day, and the government withdrew their funding. And we had a target to raise £750,000 in 6 weeks. And I thought of something that you could do to raise it. It was actually putting banners on lampposts. And I put a banner on every single lamppost in Portsmouth and raised the money for the D-Day celebrations. It's always thinking outside of the box. What can you do to make a difference?
So you were there for 8 years, and then what happened?
They made everybody redundant. So a department that started off with 100 plus people was down to three people.
And how did you feel about that?
devastated. It had been my world. You know what I mean? I've left university, got the role, knew the job backwards. And I come from a city of 270,000 people. We're on an island. And I thought, what can I do? It was a shock. Mm. I was quite lucky because obviously I had redundancy pay, so I could sit back and relax. But it was not enough for me. So I put my CV in again to an agency and got offered a job role in London in a completely different sector, something I'd never had any knowledge of. But they wanted to use the experience that I built up by talking to businesses.
And that was?
It was apprenticeships.
Okay. So tell us a bit more about that role.
That role was actually was with the first ATA, which is an apprenticeship training agency, to go and engage with businesses and find employment for young people.
And after that?
Another training provider, which was working with a training provider that just did a couple of frameworks at the time. And then I got headhunted by a firm in the city who were a recruitment agency, but actually wanted to go engage with their clients, use the funding and deliver apprenticeships. And I ended up getting sacked from there.
So you got sacked from there. So how did you feel about that?
At the time, yes, it's quite a shock. It was the month of December and I thought my world has ended. But by the time I walked out the room, I was very lucky. I'd had two phone calls offering me work.
Why did they sack you, if you don't mind us asking?
Because the sector I worked in, I found there was lots of shortfalls and it wasn't doing benefits to young people. Apprenticeship could be delivered in 6 weeks at the time. You cannot do an apprenticeship in 6 weeks. There's no quality in that. I'd already started a LinkedIn group. We only had a few hundred members at the time, but I started putting comments on LinkedIn about 6 weeks apprenticeships, about it not being right. And my employer that I was working with had been told that if I did not stop speaking out, they would lose their funding.
And I think it's really important to make the point that apprenticeships cannot be delivered now in 6 weeks. That was something that took place back then, and you were very right to speak out about that. And you actually then started doing the thing that you do now, which has made such an impact on your life and that, you know, the lives of many others. So explain what you did.
Well, I'd started this LinkedIn group and I just thought there was something there. I thought if I've got sat for reaching out to people by talking on a very small group, this can actually make a change. So I set a mission to expand the LinkedIn group, which is a platform for professional people, for business people to talk to one another. And now the group is the largest of its kind in the world on apprenticeships.
So what types of people belong to it, of the 28,000?
We've got some of the biggest companies in the country, their CEOs on it. We've got apprentices on there. We've got people that work in the sector on there. We've got members of parliament. We've got members of the House of Lords on there. We've got people that run the apprenticeship sector from the Department of Education, from the skills funding agencies. We've got colleges on there. We've got schools on there. We've got training funding. In fact, it's a 360 approach. Anybody, whether you're a parent, an apprentice, of an employer, a government agency, the membership it comprises of all these people.
And also, in addition to this platform now, you run conferences, don't you? Tell us a bit about those.
I thought that I've been to a lot of conferences and I found what was happening, we had training providers talking to training providers or sectors. So if you were in manufacturing businesses talking to manufacturing businesses, and apprenticeships involve so many more different people. Also, we have so many newcomers, like small businesses. If you are a business of seven people, and 95% of employers in our sector are actually small businesses, you can't afford to pay hundreds of pounds to attend a one-day conference if you don't know it's going to make a difference to you. So my idea was to engage with businesses from all sizes, but to make it affordable for businesses to attend. So I started events off where it would cost you £30 or £40 to attend.
So really the role, as you've sort of defined it, is about really selecting any industry. Yours happens to be apprenticeships, but selecting any industry where you feel strongly that changes need to be made and where you can make a difference. And then creating platforms and environments where you can facilitate debate, make sure the right people hear that debate, and ultimately push for improvements. So in addition to the platforms that you've created and the debate that you facilitated, what other things do you get involved in as part of your role?
Especially consultations for government. I live in very much a regulated sector where we get dictates from government. So it's actually having an input into the consultations that take place so that the changes that are made are actually fit for purpose and that actually suit employers and suit apprentices and actually feed into government or government departments. So that has been a real inroad to what I've been able to manage to do. So without being a funded organisation, a government department, as a one-person business, you can make a difference and have an input.
What's the nicest part of the role, do you think?
When you hear how an apprenticeship has made a difference for a young person, and what I always try and do at my conferences is have young people. A couple of years ago, and I've done it a few times now, I've actually had, as an add-on to the main conference where it's professionals, just apprentices come together.
Yeah.
And I've called it the Apprentice Conference. And we've had 200 or 300 apprentices.
You've done that's been amazing. You've done that in Westminster before, haven't you?
Yeah. Where they come together and just young apprentices come and talk. They listen to speakers. And a couple of times we've had ministers, actually, the Minister for Education, take questions and answers from apprentices. And they come and say, do you know, that's the hardest thing I've ever done. Mm. It's not stage managed and you don't know what's going to be said. And that, to hear young people talk about their experience, good or bad, is such an eye-opener.
So again, it's all adds up to basically making the industry better and
Absolutely.
Better quality. What's the biggest challenge, do you think, in this role?
It's making sure that you are representing all views, not just your own personal view, because that would do nobody any good. Mm. It's like some people like Marmite, some people don't. So it's making sure that what you are trying to show, so you've got to show left and right views so people can make their own judgment, because you can't be the answer for everybody out there.
And what do you think are the attributes needed to be successful as a lobbyist?
You've actually have got to be open-minded. You've got to be able to engage with people. You've actually got to be able to think, not everybody's going to agree with you. You mustn't be afraid of knocking on doors, picking up a telephone and speaking to people. You've actually got to talk to people and understand. You've got to have a clear vision about what you want to do, whether it's to actually make a change, make people aware. That's the only way you can make change happen.
And give us an idea of the sort of things you get involved in a typical week.
My average email is like it's about 400 or 500 emails a day. If you have connections on LinkedIn, I think mine is just up to the limit of 30,000. You run groups that have members of 28,000. You have people that follow you that aren't connections, whatever. People will contact you. Mm. And it's not just all about PPI. People actually talk to you and they've got real issues. And it's actually make sure that you manage that, because nothing's worse for somebody if they've emailed you and you haven't responded to them.
So you're responding to all these emails?
I work for myself. So yes, I don't have anybody to do it for me. So it has to be done.
And phone calls and things like that?
Phone calls, you never know what phone calls. My number is out there. So people will phone you up from first thing in the morning to late at night. And if you have an event on, everybody wants a piece of you. You know, a week before I put on an event, your phone is ringing night and day.
So how much time do you spend on sort of researching, writing articles, things like that?
That when I'm not doing events, that is what I do day in, day out, because there is nowhere to go. It's not like there is a paper for apprenticeships.
Well, that's what you create, isn't it?
I have created, yeah. There's lots of negative stories, which does nobody any good. But people work really hard to make things work, but we don't do enough to promote them. We have National Apprenticeship Weeks, and they want to engage with young people, and they spend a lot of money on ad campaigns, but they put them out in Coronation Street. That is not going to engage with young people. People don't watch Coronation Street EastEnders. I was speaking to somebody the other day and I said, if you wanted to engage with my 17-year-old grandson, you would have it as an advert on one of his games that he watches, because since he comes in from college, he's upstairs in his room on his games machine. You've got to talk to people, whatever you want to do, in the medium they understand.
And how many hours do you work?
if I was getting paid overtime, I'd be a very rich person.
So you work a lot of hours, I know, nights, weekends, things like that.
It's because I love doing it. So to me, it's not work. That is like people read books, people might play games, people might paint. For me, what I do is my hobby and my passion, if you like. So I don't find it as work.
And this isn't something that one would get into to make lots of money, is it? Or is it?
You can make a very good... I say you can do both, but it depends how... I think I go the extra mile. You know, you can work 9 to 5 and do X amount. I try and do so much that one person can only do so much in so many hours. So I probably work a lot longer than what other people would do. But yes, you can. You know, you could look at the research for working on TV programs, for being a journalist. There's all sorts of areas, even research in themselves. There is so many areas. If you've got a passion for engagement and finding out information, that people go into.
And where could this lead to if someone were to be involved as a lobbyist in an industry of their choice? What would be next? I mean, where else could they go to in terms of their career?
You call it a campaigner, a lobbyist. You've got to have a knowledge of the subject matter. I've only done this for 6 years, but I immerse myself into the subject matter. If you are going to become a campaigner or a lobbyist, whatever, you've actually got to understand the subject matter. You've got to understand whatever it is you want to work in. You've got to understand it. You've got to understand who the people that are involved in the sector are, who are the influencers, who are the doers, what is the good and what is the bad. It can lead to all different sort of areas, whether it be setting up your own company to engage with employers. You could go into TV. I think there's lots of work. There's so many different investigative programs out there. Paper journalism for, you know, the education sector is massive, and having that knowledge and being a campaigner and engaging with the people that have got views and is open to people. Mm. The market is out there, even working in schools or further education colleges, working for the government themselves, the Department of Education, the Skills Funding Agency, Ofqual, Ofsted.
So whatever government divisions would be relevant to your subject matter. So for example, if someone were, I don't know, a lobbyist in the energy world, then, you know, you've got government departments, you've got television programs, you've got newspapers, you've got industry press, all relevant to their industry. So if we had someone sitting here now, and I'm sure we do, who is inspired to follow in your footsteps, it probably isn't in this industry, but in another industry of their choice, what would be your advice to them about how to do that?
First of all, I'll go and find out who's interested in the same subject matter as you. Get together, whether it be online or local groups. Actually engage with people that are interested in the same subject as yourselves. Find out what you have in common or don't have in common, but also find out where the shortfalls are in what you're doing. And actually think, how can we make a difference? That's the first step. You've got to start. It's like baby steps. You've got to start somewhere. You start at the beginning. I had an idea when I had 900 members on LinkedIn, which is not a great amount. And I thought, I want to get people together. So I was very lucky because a lady who was part of education at Channel 4 was a member of the group. So I thought, like I said, my motto is, if you don't ask, you don't get. I phoned her up and I said, would there be any chance that Channel 4 could host this meeting for me? And she said, yes. So Channel 4 in Victoria, they let me have their theatre. So on that day, I had 900 members and 100 members of that 900 from all over the country come together on a Friday afternoon just to talk.
And that was a free event, and you actually did it for very low cost, and it kicked off your events programme, didn't it?
It kicked off my events programme. My second one was actually at the Olympic Stadium. Same ethos. I phoned up and asked. They said, come along. They liked what I was trying to do. And it started people thinking, actually, there's not been events of this type before. And it's how the events side of my business has taken off.
So, Lindsay, if people are wanting to find out more about your group and ask you questions really about establishing something similar, maybe in another industry, how is the best way for them to contact you?
On LinkedIn, apprenticeships with an S on it, the end of apprenticeships, the number 4 England on LinkedIn. My website, which is app4ing.info, or just look me up on Apprenticeships for England on Facebook. Telephone numbers there, contact details, and always happy to talk to people and try and help.
Well, Lindsay, you know, having been involved in this sector for a number of years myself now, I'm so pleased that you joined us because, you know, I'm a massive advocate of yours. I think the impact that you've had is phenomenal. So full credit to you. You do an amazing job. Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, thank you, Angela, for having me.